Welcome to Above and Below, a Salt Lake podcast, where we're going to be exploring above and below the surface. We'll take a deep dive into the world of fishing, diving, and surfing. Every week, we're going to sit down with experts to learn more about them and get their freshest, hottest takes on all things salty. Welcome to Above and Below, a Salt Life podcast. I'm your host, Cheyenne Pearson, and today we have team member Lisa Stengel on with us. Today, we're going to discuss her passion for underwater photography. Lisa, how's it going?
It's great. I'm doing great.
We're so happy to have you on. And before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Lisa, and I am from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I have been there my whole life. I'm from there. I love to spearfish. I love to dive. I started out scuba diving, kind of moved into free diving, and that's pretty much been my life ever since.
So awesome. So what have you been up to? How's the diving been?
Yeah, it's been great. So I've spent the last 2 months in the Virgin Islands. I work on boats. I'm a boat captain when I'm in Fort Lauderdale. And then when I'm here away, I'm a mate on a yacht. So we've been here doing some charters, moving around U.S. Virgin Islands, British Virgin Islands. And so I've gotten to do a lot of the diving around here, and it's beautiful. It's my first time here, and it's super cool.
That's so awesome. How much longer will you be there?
I'm actually leaving tomorrow. Yeah, my time's up. Going back home.
Oh, but is James with you, or are you by yourself?
No, I'm by myself, so I'll be meeting back up with him tomorrow. I'll see him. I'm excited. Yeah, he's Salt Life too.
That's super exciting. We just did an episode with him not too long ago discussing a few of your trips together, and he was complimenting your photo. Can you tell us a little bit about your big photo?
Yeah, so I'm super excited about this photo. It's, I don't know, probably the most epic photo that I've been able to accomplish so far. So James and I went to Magdalena Bay in Mexico. It's the Baja side of Mexico. And we were going to do the bait balls with the striped marlins. So the striped marlins, they'll be big bait balls of sardines there, and the marlins will come, and a lot of action. There's always sea lions around. Sometimes you'll get whales that come in too. So we really went for the striped marlins. I've never seen those underwater before, so super excited about that. And we had some really interesting weather conditions. That was my first time out there. And what happened this year was the water temperatures were super warm than they normally are that time of year. We went in November, and it kept the marlin a lot farther from shore, but it brought in all these mahi-mahi. They don't normally see mahi-mahi that time of year. And so we were doing this filming, trying to get photos of the mahi-mahi. And this one particular day, it was the very last day of our trip and the very last dive of the trip. And we got this beautiful bait ball full of mahi-mahi. There were sea lions there too. And it was a lot of sardines. It was super compact. And I was able to get this photo of this mahi-mahi coming through the bait ball, grabbing a sardine in its mouth, and I got it from like the outside. So the mahi-mahi was coming in and I was on the outside. It's just the perfect moment. I was so excited.
I've seen the photo and it's absolutely incredible. What award did it win? I know it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so it's the Underwater Photographer of the Year Award. It's based out of the United Kingdom. Yeah, and it's a really big photography contest. It's something that I don't normally enter. I'm a bit of an amateur, you know. So James is the great photographer, and he kind of pushed me to enter. He's like, "This one's great. Like, you need to be a part of this." Like, okay. So I entered it, and there's different categories that you can win. So the category that I entered was for the up and coming underwater photographer of the year. It's for people who are a little bit more amateur like me. And I wound up winning, and it's so funny because when I made it towards the finalist section of it, they tell you before they announce the things, and the category number that I had entered, it's category number 8, but I thought I was 8th place. I told Jason, like, "Oh, I got 8th place. I'm so excited." And then I realized, oh no, that's the category number. Like, I actually won.
That's so awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What an awesome feat, and having that whole experience go down and like be still being excited about 8th and then finding out that you actually won. I bet that your emotions were through the roof.
It was crazy. I never thought, you know, I never even thought that was possible. And it's funny too, because when it happened, when I took that photo, it was the best one that I took of the trip, and I had it in my viewfinder. We always look, you know, we get back on the boat and everybody's looking in the viewfinder, looking at all the photos they took. And I was like, oh, like, this is the one, this one's so good. And we pass it around the boat, look at this, you know. So it all kind of came full circle. It's just really like a really cool experience. I've never had that happen before.
Oh, I love that.
That was super exciting for me.
So tell us a little bit about underwater photography, why it's so exciting and unique, and specifically to you as well.
So I really loved underwater photography because, you know, I really love diving. I love going on dives. I love seeing all the different areas, different wrecks, different reefs. And I wanted to be able to view it again, you know, like take a little bit of that back home with me. So that was kind of how I got into it. And I started with a GoPro. I had a little GoPro camera because that was the easiest way for me to do underwater. It's waterproof. You put it in the waterproof housing. It's really small. So it was easy to take that diving with all the gear and not worry about it so much. So I started with the GoPro, and from there it just escalated. I wanted the photos to be better and better and started upgrading my camera system, and that's it.
How long have you been doing it?
Pretty much since I started diving, since I started scuba diving even, which was like 2008. So it's been a while. Yeah.
That's awesome. So you've been, you know, going through different levels of learning and different hoops you've had to jump through learning different, gear. What gear would you say is most important to have?
Yeah. So, definitely the underwater housing. Just having something that's reliable. I know that was something that I always worried about, was flooding the camera. And so straight out of the bat, as soon as I moved from the GoPro and got into having like a DSLR camera, you know, I wanted the best underwater housing for that, because it's a big purchase, you know, it's something, it's an investment. It's something that, you know, I'm passionate about. So I wanted to be able to have something that I could rely on. So I use Nauticam housing, and, you know, James, he does photography also. He's taught me a lot. And so he also uses that system. So we kind of share gear too. We have a whole little kit of gear that we share. So that also helps.
If I'm correct, the housings are super expensive, right? Like sometimes they might even be more than your camera.
Yeah, mine was probably about the same as the camera. Yeah, and you have to take care of them. You know, you always have to rinse them after every dive. And clean out the inside, make sure there aren't dust particles on the inside, make sure your O-rings are in good shape, lubricate your O-rings, exercising the buttons, and taking care of it. You definitely have to take care of it. It's a lot more of a process than just the little simple GoPro, but it's worth it. You know, the difference in a lot of the images I've been able to capture is, you can see the difference, you know?
Definitely. And what camera do you use? Is there a specific one that you guys find that you like best, whether it be an exact model or a brand?
Yeah, so we both use the Sony cameras. I actually started with a Canon. And I really liked the Canon because I had wanted to do a lot of video. But then I went to Norway to do film the orca whales, and up there's not a lot of light in the water, and I didn't have a strobe system, so I wanted a camera that could also do low light really well, and that's Sony. So I wound up switching to Sony after that. Canon's still a great camera. It takes really amazing photos, really amazing video, but just for that range of different capabilities and being able to have the low light, that was important. So I switched to Sony, and it's been working out for me. James uses Sony as well. So that's our favorite right now.
That's good. It probably makes it a lot easier for you guys to have the same gear in case you run into any problems. You can troubleshoot together.
Exactly. Yeah. Anytime we go on a trip, we always have a lot of extras of things. So if something breaks, you know, we've always got extras between the two of us. We have different lenses as well, so we can kind of mix and match and switch with the lenses and different dome ports. So it's been, that definitely helps having a buddy that's also into photography, you know, in my case, a husband.
I'm sure. So you mentioned videography. I'm interested to know, is that something that's like a whole different animal? Do you have to have the different setup for that? And do you do that also?
I do. I try. Again, I'm an amateur, you know, so it's something that I've I actually prefer video over photo. But for video, you definitely have to have a few different things. So for one is like the SD card, you know, you're using up a lot more memory space when you're doing video as opposed to photos. So you definitely want to have higher operating SD cards for that. Also the battery life, you use up a lot more battery life with video than you do with photos. So small things like that, as far as being in an underwater housing, really matter, because on a trip where you're in and out of a boat, you can't open and close the housing to switch those things out. Or it's more difficult to switch those things out from a boat. So having good batteries, having good memory cards, those are like my top things that for video make a bigger difference than photos.
That's something to consider. I never would have thought, oh, you know, if your battery dies, you can't like pop it open and then just put in a new one, because one drop of water could probably be so hazardous to your camera.
Exactly. And like, you can make it happen. I've had to do it before, but it's a very, you know, a delicate thing, you know, it's okay. You got to dry everything really well. And it's a little bit nerve wracking. And, you know, when we were doing the trip in Mexico where I took that photo, we're in a little panga. There's not like a lot of room. It's a very open, exposed boat. So it's not a good place to be doing, you know, an exchange like that and opening up your camera, getting salt inside of it and dust and anything really, water, all of those things. It's just more, way more difficult. So I try not to do it. I want to be able to have my memory card and my battery last for the whole day of diving and not have to be in and out of the housing.
That makes sense. How long would you say your battery life and SD card will last you doing videography right now, the ones you have?
So the ones that I have are pretty good. The temperature matters as well. So when I was doing the orcas in Norway, it's really cold water. The battery was really struggling for that. So I didn't make it through that whole day with one battery. And there was a few dives I had to sacrifice the camera, and it was okay. I'm here to watch this with my eyes, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, sometimes you got to put the camera down and just see what's happening in front of you and just remember it that way. But temperature also matters. So most of the time I can make it through the day, which is what I have in the camera. But that trip was difficult.
Speaking of difficulties, what would you say some of your biggest hurdles have been, or learning curves getting into underwater photography and videography?
Definitely editing, I think. And I try to do as little post editing as possible. So trying to get the lighting right underwater, the white balance right underwater, getting your exposure settings right, where I can do a minimal amount of post editing later. You always have to do a little bit, obviously, you know, everything looks just a little bit better when you run it through Lightroom, right? But I try to do as little of that as possible. So a lot of times I'll change things a lot while I'm on a dive. I'll try different things, and just having to constantly kind of manipulate things, that's a bit of a learning curve for me. Just seeing, okay, well, that didn't work last time. What am I going to try this time? And just messing around with different settings. And the camera that I have a Sony a7 R3, has so many different capabilities. There's so many different functions that it can do. So just really getting to know your camera as well. That's a big learning curve.
You have to like spend some time with it and trial and error everything.
Exactly. Going through all the menus and trying all the different settings. And, you know, I'll do a lot of research as well, just trying to learn about all the different functions and what they can do. And same with editing. All those editing programs have all sorts of different other functions that they can do as well, to make that process also quick. So all this is a lot of information, right? It's just kind of getting through all the info and applying it to the situation that you have in front of you. Big learning curve for sure.
Oh yeah. How much does the lighting and composition matter, whether it's just raw photo or when it comes time to edit? Is that something that plays a big role?
It does. So I have always found that it's better to have your photo a bit underexposed than overexposed. Because if it's underexposed, when you do the editing later, you can usually brighten it up much easier. You can bring those details back. But if it's overexposed, you can't. It's much harder to get to fix those details. So better to be a little bit darker and do the post edit than to be too overexposed.
That's really good to know because I have a Nikon D5600, which I shamefully have not actually learned. And we've had it for like 5 years now. Every time I get it out, I get so frustrated. And I'm not even underwater. I'm just trying to take like land pictures. But it would make sense what you just said about the overexposure because I'm always like, oh, I want it as bright as it can be. And then half the time it's blown out. If I try to take pictures of people, they look like really ghostly. So that would make sense to, you can always adjust the lighter, but you can't necessarily go the other way.
Exactly. And I've noticed it too with the LCD screen on the camera. I'll look at the LCD screen and it looks beautiful and bright. Oh, wow, it looks amazing. Then I'll put it on the computer and it looks a lot different. I'll put it in the editing program on the computer to look at it. And, you know, that the two LCD screens are even different. So that's something that sometimes I think about as well. There is a function that's on my camera, and I learned about this a long, long time ago. It's called like zebra stripes, and you can find it in, it's on most cameras, and you can use it, and it'll show, it makes little lines wherever things are overexposed in the screen to kind of help, you know, because sometimes, especially if you're outside and it's bright out, you can't really tell in the LCD screen, is that too bright? But they'll put little lines there and it kind of tells you, okay, that's too overexposed and you can turn that exposure down a little bit. So I use that sometimes for video.
That sounds super helpful.
Yeah.
So mentioning the whole, you're looking at it on your LCD screen and then you're taking the photo or video and you're putting it on your computer. Is there a best way to do that to not lose quality?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know. I usually just transfer the SD card straight to my computer and I'll import everything into Lightroom that way. I know sometimes when you're scaling and when you're exporting, there's different settings that you can use for that. And there's definitely ways that you can accidentally make it less quality. But that's one of the like learning curves with the editing programs. There's many different ways to do that depending on what you're using it for, whether printing it or you're just sending it or like just have it on your phone. Yeah.
It sounds like you put a ton of time and effort into learning your material and your gear and tweaking the way you do things to make it as best as possible. And that just goes to show part of the reason why you were able to have your award-winning photo and continue to succeed in it, and having James, your husband, as your partner to kind of bounce off each other and learn is so great.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. It's been a fun journey.
So for our listeners who are thinking, okay, this sounds really interesting to me. I want to give underwater photography a try. Where should I start? What's your recommendation seeing as how it is an expensive hobby?
Yeah, I definitely think starting small is better. And I definitely think that even before you get a camera, there's so many things that you can learn about how to take a photo that's worth learning and researching even before you actually purchase the camera. That way, when you are looking at the type of cameras that you want, you can navigate through all of the camera jargon that's listed as far as like features for each camera, right? If you don't know what they're talking about, then you don't know if it's the best thing that's going to work for you and what you're doing. So learning how to take a photo first, learning about exposure and framing, things like that. You can learn all those things without actually having the camera in front of you. So I think that definitely helps before actually buying something. And then also just being like, particularly for underwater photography, the biggest thing that's helped me and what helped me with this photo as well is just being aware in the water and like being part of your being a good photographer is being a good diver as well. So like for this photo, part of why I was able to get that shot was because I was listening. So what was happening with that bait ball was they were making very specific noises. Every time the mahi would hit the sardines, it'd make this noise. And so I was listening for that noise and I was actually following with the camera. And that's how I knew when it was going to bust through the bait ball. So it's part of like awareness, right? You know, like being a good diver definitely will help with being a good photographer, an underwater photographer.
That's so good. I love both of those points of information because you can start right there with both of those without spending a dollar. You can go, you know, start being more aware in the water and observing different behaviors of fish and bait and just underwater life, and then do your research at home, give you a little something to do, and not have to spend a dollar And then by the time you actually get your hands on your camera, not only are you ready to go, but all this buildup of learning really probably pushes you in the right direction.
Definitely. I wholeheartedly agree. Yeah.
Super great advice. Thank you for that. So is there any stories that you have for us, whether it be a recent trip or even one that's way from the past that you can highlight a great underwater photography, videography, or just overall experience that you've had?
Definitely the orcas. That was a top photo trip for me because it was also really challenging. Those lighting conditions were super difficult. The temperature was difficult. I actually wound up doing that same trip 3 times because it was so difficult. And I started the first time that I did it, I only had a GoPro. I started with a GoPro and I got the footage back and it was really great. But I was like, I need to go back with a better camera. I need more, right? I got hooked on it. So the second time I went, I had the Canon. I brought the Canon with me. Same thing, got some amazing things, but I was like, nope, I got to do it again. I need more. The last time I went just recently was with the Sony that I have, and James was with me, and they had the Northern Lights there too. So we got a little bit of underwater photography and land photography. So that was definitely a really memorable photo trip for sure.
I actually went and before we hopped on, kind of creeped your social media, and I saw the Northern Light pics. I saw the orcas, and I also saw this gorgeous picture of a manta ray that you took. When and where was that?
The manta was in Socorro. So Socorro is they're called the Revillagigedo Islands. It's an archipelago of islands that's like 100 miles off the coast of Baja, Mexico. And James and I went, we did a liveaboard trip over there, and it's amazing wildlife. I think it's a marine park. It's like a UNESCO World Heritage Site, I think. And lots of different things. Sharks, the wildlife there is amazing. There's whales there too. And the mantas kind of congregate there. And that was a place where we got some really amazing manta action. So really cool trip. I really liked Socorro, way out there.
That's so awesome. What's your favorite place that you have traveled to for underwater photography so far?
Oh, that's tough. I definitely think Polynesia was a favorite. We went to French Polynesia recently for whales, and that was pretty spectacular. The corals that are there are amazing, really amazing. And the whales there, the water clarity, it's a really cool place. I was just in awe the whole time of everything around me.
I bet on those trips you feel like you could never have enough time. Like it's so hard to take everything in at once, I'm sure.
It's true. They're always too short, right? Every time I go somewhere, I'm like, too short. I need again. Yeah.
So with all the amazing places you've been, where's one place that you haven't been for underwater photography that you're just dying to go?
Oh, this is good. So I have finally found a way to get there. So it's a trip that I'm finally putting into fruition, but it's happening next year. I'm going to Antarctica, but underwater to dive and take pictures.
That is so awesome. But what do you need to go do that trip? That sounds like freezing.
Yeah. It's going to be cold for sure. But what's weird about there is it's actually not as cold as like you'd think. And at the time of year that I'll be going will be the austral summer. So it'll be summertime down there. So not as cold as it can get, right? But definitely a thick wetsuit, like an 8 mil probably.
And you guys will be diving underneath the ice, right? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's not like solid ice usually. Like it'll be kind of icebergy. So the places where we'll dive, I think they'll probably maybe just be chunks, but we're going to be going for wildlife. So hopefully penguins will see, whales are down there, orcas are down there, leopard seals. We're going to try to follow the wildlife where the wildlife are. So we'll see what we find. I'm super excited. It's someplace I've been trying to go for a really long time. Yeah.
How incredible is that? I couldn't imagine seeing a penguin diving with me in the water. Oh my gosh. I cannot wait to see those photos. What an exciting trip.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm so excited.
And what time of year did you say you guys were planning to go?
It's our winter, but it's south, so it's the austral summer. So it'll be their summer, but our winter.
Okay, interesting. So, oh, that's kind of like a little bit of a head game. So you're leaving what would be like 100-degree Florida and going to the freezing cold, but it's their summer.
Yep. And it's like daylight all day.
That's so cool. And will you see, I really don't know much about Antarctica, but are the Northern Lights there as well during that time of year?
Yeah, so the Northern Lights will happen, so they're Aurora Australis. So like up north is Aurora Borealis, this is Aurora Australis. So the same thing will happen, but because I'm going in the summer and it's daylight all day, I won't be able to see it. Like it still happens, but you just can't see it because it's daylight outside. But they get it as well. So like if I went at like a more normal time, like a spring or a fall, they would have lights down there. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, that's super exciting. Can you shout out your social medias for our listeners so they can follow along with all your adventures? Go stalk your profile, see these amazing photos, and anticipate your trip to Antarctica.
Yeah, I'm Bobcat Lisa on all of them. Bobcat Lisa, that's me.
So awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on with us, Lisa. And again, congratulations on your award-winning photo. Can't wait to see what more you have in store. And I look forward to following along with your future trips.
Thank you so much. It was so good to see you, Cheyenne.
Good to see you. I'll talk to you soon. Hopefully, we'll get you back on the podcast shortly.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening in to Above and Below, a Salt Life podcast. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Real Salt Life. If you've enjoyed this episode, rate and review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast to help spread the word. And remember, stay salty.